Welcome to the Future Work Playbook. This podcast series features founders, investors, and legal talent that will help you embrace technology and transform your organization for a better future. This series is hosted by Natalie Pierce, the chair of Gunderson Dettmer's Labor and Employment Law Practice. Natalie and her guests are committed to helping you develop new playbooks to elevate your game.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Future Work Playbook. This is Natalie, your host. Our entire firm at Gunderson is focused on the innovation economy, and our motto is, we represent what's next, which is why this season, our podcast is devoted to our cutting-edge clients who have been named to Fast Company's prestigious list of the most innovative companies. These trailblazers are truly building our future. And today, I'm so excited to welcome Daniel Landesberg, the head of legal at Amagi. Thanks for joining us, Daniel.
And Natalie, thanks for having me on.
Great. Listen, I was in New York City this year when Amagi was recognized at Fast Company's annual award ceremony. So I certainly know and appreciate Amagi. But for our listeners, Daniel, can you share a bit about Amagi, what it does, and what makes it so special in the technology and energy space?
Yeah, absolutely. So Amagi is a clean energy company, and our mission is to provide technology that unlocks ammonia's potential as clean energy, as a clean energy source. And so what our primary product is an engine that runs on ammonia fuel by converting it into hydrogen at the point of use. And then it feeds that hydrogen into a hydrogen fuel cell to generate electricity. So we are primarily serving maritime applications as well as stationary power and heavy industry. And really the core of our technology is a reactor that can convert ammonia into hydrogen at the point of use very efficiently. And so for people who might be familiar with all the recent interest and investment in hydrogen as power, there's also some challenges that come with using hydrogen as fuel. For one thing, it boils at negative 423 degrees Fahrenheit. So that makes it makes it difficult to store and transport, right? It basically has to be a gas or a highly pressurized liquid. Ammonia is one of the most commonly produced chemical compounds in the world because it's widely used in agriculture. It already runs in pipelines around the world. It's liquid at ambient temperature, so it's relatively easy to store and transport. And it's significantly more energy dense than hydrogen. And ammonia is made up of three parts hydrogen, one part nitrogen. So what our system does is it basically takes ammonia, it kicks out that one part nitrogen, which is already the most abundant thing in the atmosphere. So not a greenhouse gas, not a problem. Then it feeds that hydrogen into the hydrogen fuel cell. So customers can benefit from the power of hydrogen energy without the challenge of hydrogen fuel.
Yeah, you know, Daniel, I think that most listeners, because I certainly learned this, were not aware that ammonia is the second most common chemical in the world. So widely, as you said, available and practical. And what your company is doing truly is revolutionary work.
It really is. I'm very excited to be a part of.
Yeah. And I'd also love it if you could tell our listeners a little bit about you, Daniel. Can you share a bit about your background and path to Amagi?
Sure. So maybe not the most conventional path to a startup role, but I was previously a lawyer at Hogan Lovells. I was actually primarily an antitrust lawyer over there. I did also some technology communications regulatory work, and I really specialized in tech antitrust matters. So litigation, but also a merger clearance, corporate counseling. And so that really gave me the opportunity, particularly on the merger side, to I worked with quite a few startup clients that were being acquired by large tech companies, and also large tech companies that were acquiring startups. And because antitrust is so focused on the market, you know, the dynamics, the product, how companies enter the market, and you know, what the impact will be of transaction, a lot of my job was really digging in on how these products came to market, how the businesses function, and what the market will look like, you know, post-transaction, and you know, the value of innovation in those markets, things like that. And so it really gave me some great insight into how different startups function and bring products to market. And so when I applied to Amagi, I honestly didn't have a ton of background in energy or environmental work, but I think that they liked, or, you know, the company liked my variety of experience with these different startups. And also I often was engaging with government agencies. And so at that time, you know, I was the first lawyer at the company. I started the legal department, and we were just starting to really kind of engage with regulators and also legislators. And so I think that my experience working in those spaces were helpful as well. And then, you know, I just started from square one, implementing policies. When you're the first lawyer at a company, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit.
A lot to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But yeah, it's been amazing. And, you know, I was hired in a wave of hiring that brought the company over 50 employees. We've hired another 100 or so since then. I've built a little legal team and had a Series B financing that raised $150 million. That was really exciting for our expansion.
Wow.
And it's been just really special to be part of something that is such exciting innovation and growing so quickly.
Yeah. Well, I think your background is a perfect one, really. And just, it's so exciting to see the growth. I mean, just since that raising of your $150 million Series B, you have been able to invest so much in the technology and into commercialization. Can you share what have been some of the challenges that you've faced at Amogee, legal or otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, there always are challenges with bringing a novel product to market, and especially when you're disrupting industry that has in many ways been the same for the past century or so.
Right.
And so for one thing, when it comes to drafting and negotiating agreements, often we're dealing with other parties, whether they're suppliers or customers, that are used to standard agreements, but they're also used to diesel engines. And so those standard agreements for, you know, shipyards with installing diesel engines on ships, for example, don't apply very well to our ammonia powered engine that is totally different technology. And there's a lot less information out there about things like designing warranty, and where it would normally be very data-based, but we're the first to do it. And so we have to pull from a number of different sources. You know, you never want to draft from scratch. The lawyers always say that you don't draft from scratch. If you can avoid it, you always want some precedent, but there's really nothing directly on point a lot of the time for us. So we have to pull from what precedents we can that we think are applicable for different things. And then, you know, we have to do some custom drafting too. And so it's challenging, but I also, you know, feels like we're helping to create standards and norms for the future of ammonia to power technologies.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, there's no question that you're having to come up with novel solutions to problems and crafting new contractual terms. This is a completely different way of delivering fuel. I would imagine that your engineers really embrace and love this challenge as you're building for different and new kinds of vehicles.
Absolutely. And I think it's really exciting. I see that a lot of our engineers are really excited to come work on building something new like this. And, you know, sometimes they come from big companies that are just, you know, have a lot more bureaucracy and less flexibility or freedom to, you know, innovate. And so it's a great opportunity for them. And it's, you know, their excitement is really contagious. I think the whole company feels it.
Yeah.
I'll also mention on the challenges part, you know, when it comes to regulations and whether that's, you know, regulations that might restrict or impose certain requirements on our technology, or things like, you know, tax credits, a lot of it is about education. And actually, it's not just with regulators, it's with customers, it's with investors. People don't know a lot about this technology. And so, and often, you know, when it does come to regulations, they're not necessarily drafted with our technology in mind. So they might broadly apply. And so we're advised, or we, you know, assess that these regulations apply to us generally. But then you look at specific application and it's not really clear where we fit in or how they apply. And so we have meetings, you know, with regulators, we have meetings on the Hill, meetings with our customers, and also presenting at conferences, publishing white papers to educate the market so that they understand the power of our technology, but also, you know, can think about our technology maybe with future guidance on regulations and things like that.
Yeah, I imagine education is a huge part of what you're doing as a company, because no one has done this before, certainly not with this level of success. In terms of, just to give us an example, What have you done in the way of educating the public or potential customers in terms of tax credits?
Yeah. So, and of course, you know, we always want to make sure that we're not providing legal advice to our customers. You know, being a lawyer, I have to say, here's, you know, guidance and resources.
Disclaimer. And, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But there are some tax credits out there that our customers can benefit from, both in the US and abroad. And so we have kind of overviews of, hey, here's some things that you guys should be aware of. We think that these may be applicable, but we do recommend that you talk to your own tax lawyers. Also, just talking to people at Department of Energy and at Treasury to basically explain that, hey, you know, there's some tax credits here that we are aligned with the purpose. Clearly, we're trying to accelerate the move towards clean energy, or maybe it's, you know, trying to bring in more domestic manufacturing of clean energy components. And we think there's a couple categories it might fit into, but some of the language is a little weird. And we'd really appreciate maybe some guidance or a footnote somewhere and some guidance to say, and ammonia, or, you know, and also just make sure that they're aware for, you know, when we actually do, or our customers do apply for these tax credits or file for these tax credits, that they know ammonia is a hydrogen carrier, because so much of the Inflation Reduction Act, for example, applies to hydrogen. And so we say, okay, that is technically applies to us too, but we want to make sure when they look at this ammonia power technology, they understand why the tax credit should apply to us.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example. And I would imagine that Amogee's growth likely requires expertise in a growing number of legal fields. Can you share how you're building the legal team, Daniel, and some of the areas you're currently hiring for, either legal or non-legal roles?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, we've gone through a phase of rapid expansion as far as hiring. And so we're actually not doing a ton of hiring right now. You know, we feel like we've largely filled the roles that we need, although I would, you know, encourage anyone listening who might be interested or know someone who might be interested to take a look at our website, amogy.co, amogy.co. And you can look at our careers, because I think there are some open roles. But as far as building the legal team, so we have four lawyers in total at the company, and a paralegal as well. And, you know, we're dealing with a wide variety of issues, and the volume of work in different areas can really vary. And so in some senses, we're really all generalists. And I think that, you know, that it keeps things interesting and also helps with balancing workload. But we do, you know, fortunately have a legal team that has diverse backgrounds as far as our legal experience. And so, you know, between us, we have lawyers who've worked at law firms and, you know, corporate regulatory litigation, IP transactions. We have one of our attorneys before going to law school was at the patent agent at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. We have people with in-house experience. And so we do cover a lot of ground between us. I mean, I think that's really helpful, not just for being able to do the work, but sometimes it's even just, you know, for issue spotting purposes. Like maybe we ultimately need outside counsel on something, but being able to identify what we need and be able to work productively with our outside counsel, it's great to have people who, you know, have exposure to the types of things we're working on before. So I think that especially early on in the company, hiring for diverse experiences is really helpful.
Yeah. Well, there's that, and also the collaboration. I like what you said about sort of encouraging, or it just happens that you develop into more of generalists, because it's not a big legal team. And so I'd imagine supporting the other and coming up with ideas and sharing ideas, you've got to work very closely, you know, not be siloed into specific areas of specialties.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we are a team of just curious lawyers. And so often, you know, even if someone is not directly working on a project, I'm very encouraging of people joining calls or just learning more about what the rest of the team is working on. And so, you know, we regularly have meetings, and, you know, we'll have team lunches or coffees and talk through things. But sometimes it's like, hey, you know, someone can listen in, and I never want to require people to be in meetings where they're not required, you know, necessary. But I, you know, love just for people to be learning. And so maybe they can be more helpful to those things in the future, and just we can all become more well-rounded lawyers together.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. And Let me ask you, what is it like supporting your company's C-suite and managing the external legal teams, given the gravity of decisions in such a rapidly evolving field?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, other lawyers at startups will probably identify with this as well, maybe even just beyond just startups. Often, the role of the legal team is not just legal analysis and advice, but just more general problem solving. And particularly at, you know, we're a relatively young company. We have brilliant people on our team, but not necessarily people with a ton of experience working with lawyers or dealing with potential legal disputes or things like that. And so it's not uncommon for things to come to us and we say, hey, you know, in theory, could we have a legal claim here? Yes, but that's not going to get us the solution that we're looking for. You know, like suing a supplier is not going to make them work faster, for example. And so we end up thinking about, what are we trying to accomplish here? And how can we get there? You know, how can we incentivize the other party to do what we want? How can we work this out without getting into a lawsuit or threatening a lawsuit? And so it's a lot more than just the legal work. But when it comes to decisions on the legal work, we're constantly assessing and balancing risk, making decisions about when we should bring in outside counsel, whether we can handle something in-house, thinking about, you know, how confident am I that we can handle this in-house versus what are the consequences if something goes wrong, if a risk, you know, comes to fruition. And so sometimes actually, if it's something that's really important, if there's major consequences, if we don't get it just right, then even if I'm have high confidence in our ability to handle it in-house, sometimes it does make sense to just run it by outside counsel, even if it's just kind of for a sanity check, you know, to confirm our work or let us know any red flags. And that's why I feel very fortunate to have strong relationships with our outside counsel, including Gunderson. And I feel very comfortable, you know, asking for a quick confirmation or a quick question, or sometimes it's a template. Like I know that, you know, we could spend a bunch of time making our own template, but if our outside counsel already has one, I'm just asking if they can send it over. And so, yeah, I mean, it is, it's constant risk assessment. And sometimes that can be a little nerve wracking, but that's also just the nature of being in-house counsel, right?
Yeah. Well, it's great to be first, but it's also going to come with a lot of challenges. But it sounds like you take a very practical, business-minded approach and know how to leverage the legal experts when you need to. So you're definitely on the rise, Daniel. You even hold a position on Amogee's board. How do you manage such a packed schedule supporting other executives, other board members, and overseeing the legal team?
Yeah. You know, I feel very lucky that I have a job that excites me. I'm passionate about it, and I constantly find it, you know, interesting and challenging. And I think that drive does actually really help to maximize productivity because, you know, I want to do my work. I wake up and I think, wow, I can't wait to dive in on these things. But of course, you know, organization and delegation are really key, and knowing the strengths of your team and knowing what's on their plate so that, you know, people are able to maximize their own productivity and giving them kind of the space and freedom to work in a way that is best for them, because everyone works a little bit differently. And that's perfectly fine as long as you're available and people understand your schedule and things like that. And yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes, and I think that everyone probably has these days, but you have a whole to-do list and then urgent things pop up and you have to just kind of drop everything and work on whatever fire drill is going on. And that's when, you know, being able to lean on your team or having outside counsel that's ready to hop in and help out can be really key. I also think that, you know, part of it is making sure that even when things are really busy and you're really stressed, being sure to maintain balance in your own life and, you know, carving out time for things that you need to do to take care of yourself and to feel healthy. And, you know, maybe it's exercise, maybe it's eating healthy, having time to cook, spending time with your family. I think that people perform best when they feel healthy, both physically and mentally. And so, you know, of course, no one's perfect on these things. And I can't say that I am either. I have times where all of a sudden it's late in the day and I think, oh my gosh, I need to take some time to eat because my brain needs food. But I do certainly perform best when I make sure that I'm taking time to do those things for myself. And so I encourage people, you know, even when you're stressed and you know, you want to spend all of your time working, to carve out a little bit of time for those things that you need in your life to feel healthy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And I think sometimes we just get so excited about what we're doing. You know, maybe it's not even that so much has to be done, but just loving what you're doing, and you don't realize that you could be putting a lot of pressure and stress on yourself if you forget to do things like eat, like exercise. Right. For me, the game changer has absolutely been prioritizing sleep. I cannot believe that it took me as long as it took to recognize what getting a good night's sleep can do to lower your stress levels and really increase the productivity, and also that the great benefits that comes with a nice long walk.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. I mean, it's a beautiful day outside of New York, and I think that this afternoon I'll go take a little walk around the park, and it's can really help to just clear your head. And, you know, if for anyone else who's just spent time staring at a document for hours on end or days on end, just taking some time to clear your head like that, go for a walk and come back and you have fresh eyes and you can spot things you might not have spotted before, and just be more ready to take that on after you've had that time.
Yeah, particularly critical when you're in the innovation economy, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So you did a beautiful job at the beginning our episode to explain your company's technology. How did you get so fluent in that technology, and how do you keep everyone kind of steering the boat in the same direction as Amagi evolves?
Yeah, it is really helpful to understand the technology. And I think that's something I learned even before Amagi, you know, when I was working with these different startups and having to explain their technology to regulators, things like that. When I first joined the company, I mean, besides just doing a lot of research on my own, I set up a lot of meetings just to ask people, hey, what are you working on? How do these things work? What are the challenges that you're facing? And so that was really helpful as far as getting an initial sense of how things are working at the company and how our technology works. And then as you know, we've grown, we've actually set up somewhat more formal opportunities for people to do that. So for example, we have this software that you can opt into to get set up with meetings with just random, they just connect to random people at the company, and you have a time for a 30-minute coffee. It can be in person or virtual, and just talk about what's going on, what are you working on, what are you doing? And you know, fortunately, we have a lot of engineers at Amagi who are not only great at their engineering work, but are also very talented at being able to break it down into, you know, simple concepts. And so, you know, I don't have an engineering background. You know, I'm an amateur passionate about these things, but it's really helpful to have people who can talk about it in kind of layman's terms and understand at least at a high level how these things work. And then once you have a grasp of the high level understanding of things, it's easier to dive in and say, okay, but why is this a challenge? Okay, what are we doing to fix this? You know, is there a risk that comes with this and these different agreements? As far as getting everyone aligned and make sure we're all moving in the same direction, I do think that alignment across the company is absolutely essential. And especially with something like we're building hardware. And so if we need to change something, we can't just code and change it. It's it might, you know, be going back to the drawing board, think about manufacturing processes. There's a lot that goes into it. And not to say that that's not true for software. I know it's also very complicated on the software side, but just to say hardware is hard. So we need to make sure that our commercial team is aligned with our technical teams, our engineering team, or our R&D team is aligned with our product team. And when we, so that everyone understands, for example, customer expectations and what we are telling customers we can do, and making sure that that actually reflects what our R&D team is doing, what our product team is putting together, so that expectations are aligned from the, on one side, R&D team, they're developing technology, all the way through our product team that's putting it all together, our customer team, our commercial team that is selling it to customers, and then customer expectations so that they get something that aligns with their expectations. And, you know, we don't have situations where they thought they're getting one thing, they get something else. So I think that it helps having people always talking to each other. We have stand-ups between different teams. Sometimes we also have task forces that are really part of their job is to bring people from different teams together and make sure they're having weekly meetings to align on what they're doing, because time lost is money lost. And when you're a pre-revenue startup, you can't afford too much of that. So it's really a key focus of the company, that alignment.
Yeah. Well, facilitating those meetups, those coffee chats really You can tell just from video on your website what a mission-driven company you are and how excited everyone seems to be there. And it makes sense because you're finding those opportunities to allow people to really understand what other parts of the company are doing. Daniel, this has just been such a fascinating conversation about how innovative legal leadership really supports groundbreaking clean energy. Thank you for sharing Amogee's journey in revolutionizing sustainable transportation through ammonia-based fuel technology. I've learned so much, and your insights into building a legal framework for such cutting-edge technology really does showcase why Amogee made Fast Company's Most Innovative Companies list. Thank you, Daniel. I really enjoyed our discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Natalie. I really enjoyed our discussion as well. It's great to be on the show.
Thank you. And to our listeners, if you're as inspired as we are by these conversations with innovators who are shaping tomorrow's economy, please subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Amazon, or Spotify, and share these stories with your friends, family, and colleagues who are interested in the future of technology and sustainable innovation. And don't forget to tune in for the rest of this special season, where we continue to highlight our remarkable clients who made it onto Fast Company's list of most innovative companies. Until next time, bye-bye.
You've just listened to the Future Work Playbook. This podcast series is brought to you by Gunderson Dettmer, the world's number one law firm representing venture capital funds and high growth companies. Join Natalie Pierce on our next episode as she and her guests help prepare your organization for the future. Please subscribe to the Future Work Playbook.